Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome to my favorite part of the afternoon, getting to spend time with you prescribing hope for healthy families. And today we are having episode 4 of the Declutter Diaries. If you've been following along since January, you know that we are fortunate enough to have Kathy Lipp with us, who is going to be with us about once a month, and we are walking through this decluttering process together. I've been sharing my own journey with you. If you're watching on the video, you'll see my trusty little rocket science notebook here. Why do I have a rocket on the front of it? Well, that's because I'm married to a rocket scientist, a real life one, who is an engineer and not the sentimental type, okay? He has no problem getting rid of clutter. It is me, the sentimental type, the literary, poetic, melodramatic. Okay, yes, that's all me. I'm the one who has trouble getting rid of stuff. And we have had some great conversations. So if you've missed out, go back and check out the first 3 episodes that we have had. We've talked about in episode 1, 100 spaces to declutter. I'm working through that list. I'm well over 3/4 of the way through it. Episode 2, we talked about how to manage all of your kids' stuff, your little kids' stuff, the kids that are in your house, and what do you do with all of their artwork and all of those kinds of things. And then on episode 3, we talked about managing those things that we just can't seem to let go of, from people who passed, from things that are sentimental to us that we don't really know what to do with, but we can't really let go of, and we're not really wanting to let go of those. So that's what we've talked about so far. We've talked about taking that messy clutter, making it into meaningful memories. We've talked about managing that, transforming that clutter, clearing your clutter. Today, we are going to learn to manage multi-generational clutter. So let me give you a little introduction, and then I'm going to bring our esteemed guest. I'm so excited to have Kathy. She's my clutter coach too. So I'm so excited to have her back. And today we're going to talk about a topic that really a lot of people are kind of quietly grappling with, often alone, often with some guilt, almost always with emotion. And I'm talking about managing your aging parents' possessions. Now, I have not experienced this myself, but I have lots of friends and other family members who've had. And if you've ever walked into a basement that seems like it hasn't been touched since maybe 1964, and you open a closet packed with old Christmas cards, or you find yourself face to face with boxes that are labeled Tim's college notebooks, then you know it's not just stuff, it's memory, it's meaning, it's history in 100 cardboard boxes. And here's the thing, many aging parents lived through times that we can hardly imagine. We're talking about the Great Depression, wartime rationing, rebuilding lives from scratch. And for them, saving wasn't hoarding, it was survival. A glass jelly jar might be a water cup. A bread bag is going to get reused and washed because we don't know if we're going to get one in the store. Everything had potential. And that mindset shaped how they live, how they love, how they save. But today, there are actually 1 in 5 adults over the age of 65 who are living by themselves, and their homes are often filled to the brim with those decades of accumulation, just that responsibility of deciding what to keep and what to let go, and then it falls to their children. And so I see last time we talked about things that we want to hang on to that we're not ready to give up. Today, we're going to talk about things that maybe you don't want to hang on to, but you feel guilty about letting them go. And at the same time, you know, our own lives are getting fuller. We have lives that are full of work, full of kids, and it's a generation that's kind of caught, this Gen X and boomers, we're kind of caught between minimalism and memory. We're not just navigating stuff, we're navigating stories. So today we are going to talk to our trusty expert, our trusted friend. We are talking to Kathy Lipp. Kathy, thank you so much for joining us again. Kathy is the Publishers Weekly bestselling author of 20 books, and one of those I have here in my hand, The Clutter clutter-free home, making room for your life. She's host of Clutter Free Academy, the podcast. She has a free Facebook group, a paid subscription group. If this is you, and I know it's a lot of you because I've heard from you, then welcome. And Kathy, thanks for coming to our rescue once again.
Okay, we have to back up though. You are three-fourths of the way through your 100 spaces.
Oh, that's what we're backing up to? I feel like I just got a gold star in class. Like, that's making me... Yes, I have my notebook right here. I can open it up and I can show you exactly. I am... Oh, hold on. I've got to go to page 3 here. 76 spaces, Kathy. That's where I'm at.
Jessica, that's amazing. Can I tell you, you get all the gold stars, seriously, because we all come in with great intentions. And, you know, I do work with clients and we work day to day to day. But, I mean, you and I only get to talk once a month. And can I just tell you, I'm so thrilled. Like, this is my husband always knows when it's Dr. Nurse Mama Day.
Aww.
I'm so excited to talk to you. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, to get through that much in the first quarter, I mean, almost the first third of the year, that's insane. You should be so incredibly proud of yourself. And I'm blown away.
Well, I am grinning from ear to ear. I'm blushing. Oh my goodness, Kathy, you're just making me feel all the things because I am an overachiever for sure. But this is something I told you I wanted to do for my husband and for my family, just because it's something that I struggle with. And I had told you before we came on the air that whenever you're on the show, my husband will say, oh, I didn't know it was Kathy. I love that lady. And he says, because she's helping you so much, you know, and she's making our lives more peaceful. So I'm determined that this is the year I'm going to take my life back. So yes, I will take all the gold stars, Kathy. I have worked on that. I have a plan this summer for when my kids come home from college to manage that. You've given me some great ideas for that sentimental clutter. I confess I have not touched any of that yet. Still a little too tender. Been traveling. But today, this sandwich concept. So take us to there. Kathy, I shared a little of my perspective. Give me yours.
Yeah. So I am very fortunate that I still have a mom who is with us. She is going to be 82 this year. And so I, being the eldest daughter, you know, being a daughter is one thing, and then the eldest daughter sometimes in some family dynamics is the next level. And so I am working to help manage her things, but then I also have adult kids. And I will say we got pretty tough with our adult kids when we moved from the Bay Area to the mountains. We're like, we are not taking your stuff with us. We just cannot. And we actually, well, I'll tell you a little bit of our plan there. But we have now moved closer to my mom to help, you know, just help her manage life. She's doing great, but we want to help her be on top of it. But I think many of us who are in our 30s, 40s, 50s are in that space where we're not just managing kids' stuff, but we're also helping to manage parents' stuff. And it's a real thing. And I don't know that anybody has dealt with it like this generation. And I'm a Gen Xer. You know, I bet we have a lot of millennials listening to us. I don't think anybody has really dealt with it like our generation. And so I just want to be the one to acknowledge, hey, we're in the middle of this decluttering sandwich, and there's generational thinking and clutter that we need to confront, one, so that we don't end up with everything, but also so that we don't saddle our kids with everything.
That is so good. And you know, Kathy, I honestly hadn't thought about it like that, but I think you're right. And it's interesting because when you look at millennials, minimalism is a huge trend with them. You know, minimalism is very popular. And that may be just why it's kind of coming out sideways is because we're feeling the pinch of that, feeling like dealing with our parents' things or older generations' things. I definitely feel that on having college kids, because it feels like somebody's always moving in or moving out, and my garage is a warehouse of holding furniture. And I think, well, I want to hang on to this because I don't want to buy it if they're going to move into something. But then at some point, Kathy, I've got to not be responsible for that. But I want to focus first on that parent piece, and then we'll move to the kids because that's where I need more help. But, you know, I remember I lived with my grandparents all during nursing school, and they grew up, you know, during World War II. And I remember one day going into my grandfather's bathroom, and there was like maybe an inch and a half of water in the tub. And I felt it, and it was pretty tepid. And I thought, okay, well, the drain must just have, you know, like not gone like it was supposed to. So I just popped the drain and let the tub drain. My pawpaw, Kathy, he comes back and finds me. I mean, like 3 hours later, and he says, "Who let out my bathwater?" And I said, I don't know. I was, you know, very anxious because he could be very intimidating. And he said, well, I wasn't finished with that. I had only taken one bath in that. And I thought, you know, that's, but that was his mindset. Like they didn't know how much water they had. And he was very frugal with everything that he had. He did wash, my granny washed aluminum foil and they washed their plastic bags. And then I've seen some of my own extended family members, you know, dealing with the death of their extended family members and then going in and feeling like so overwhelmed. Where do you even start? You don't want to miss anything special, but at the same time, it's so much stuff. So how do we even begin to approach that, Kathy?
Yeah. So I think one thing is I think that many people in that generation feel that we are so wasteful. Just because we've never had to live like that before. And maybe it's not even with judgment, but we don't know. And let's be honest, I'm going to use a word here that probably some people feel is overused, but I'm going to go ahead and use it. We don't understand the trauma that they lived through, where they didn't know, you know, if their garden didn't produce, what were they going to eat? If they didn't have flour sacks, what were they going to wear? You know, there are people that had to think in those terms. And I look at those things, and I've had to have some conversations with my mom about, my dad was a hoarder, as you know. Mm-hmm. And so when he died, and this is going to sound callous, I want to reframe it for people. Just hours after my dad died, my mom started packing his stuff up to give away. Oh. And some people will think that that feels cold. Mm-hmm. I think of it as my mom lived with those things long past my dad was actually using them and honored him by keeping those things around and was finally free without hurting him to give those things away. Mm-hmm. And so my mom has lived through a little bit of this, but how we've had to reframe this conversation is to understand that just because something was significant to my mom doesn't necessarily mean that it is significant to me, but there is an overlap. There are some things that are very significant to my mom that are significant to me, and those are the things that when she passes, I will bring into my home. But I also know that keeping her things is not a symbol of my love for her.
And you need to say that again and louder for the people in the back.
Yeah. Keeping her things is not a symbol of my love for her. I could not love my mom any more than I do. And I also know that she is not her stuff. So there are things that I will keep in honor. My mom is a quilt artist. Not one quilt will go someplace that is not honoring. Mm. But there are things like her dishes that are not important to me. Or, you know, her furniture, which is very important to her, but it's not my style. And that's okay. But also, my mom a few years ago said, hey, I don't know if you know why some of these things are important. So what she did is she
I'm going to hold you right there, Kathy. Hold you right there because we're already up against our first break. Can you believe this? This goes so fast. But I want to know the rest of that story when we come back. We have so much more to talk about, talking about how do we navigate those conversations. And I'm going to answer the question, are younger generations wasteful? We'll talk about it when we come back with Kathy Lipp.
Have you wanted to take your family to Kentucky to visit the Creation Museum and the Ark Encounter, but just never took the time? Don't put it off any longer. Let 2025 be the year you check that off the list. In fact, you can make it an even more memorable trip when you join AFA at the Ark October 30th and 31st. On Thursday, you'll get transportation for a tour of the Creation Museum, and Friday will take you for a tour of the Ark Encounter. But that's just the beginning. Expand your knowledge of creation with a special dinner presentation on Thursday by Answers in Genesis astronomer Dr. Danny Faulkner. Friday, Dr. Georgia Purdom, Answers in Genesis Vice President of Educational Content, will help you dig deeper into the Bible. And Friday evening, enjoy dinner and a panel discussion with Tony Vitagliano, Walker Wildman, and Wesley Wildman, Vice Presidents of American Family Association. Visit afa.net/events today and click on AFA at the Ark. afa.net/events and click on AFA at the Ark.
You healed a brokenhearted. You set the captive free. You lift the heavy burden. And even now you are lifting me. There is no healer.
Welcome back, friends. That's Impossible Things by Chris Tomlin. And something that a lot of families feel is impossible is getting control of your clutter. I know I have felt that way forever. It feels like it's just been the bane of my existence, just shuffling piles of stuff around. Those of you who think, oh, is her life perfect? It is certainly not, because I've got piles of clutter everywhere. But we are having the Decluttering Diaries to talk about this, and we'll be talking about this once a month all through 2025. If you've missed the first three episodes, go back and take a listen. We talked about 100 spaces to declutter to get you started. We talked about managing all of your little kids' stuff, all of that artwork, all of those trophies, everything. And we talked about managing stuff for people who passed. And today we're talking about multi-generational clutter. Now, this topic really hits at the heart of modern family life because most of us have childhood trophies, prom dresses, college textbooks in our parents' attic. How do we finally deal with them? So we're talking about this concept that Kathy has brought to me called the sandwich generation, where we've got adults in midlife who are dealing with their parents' stuff and their kids' stuff. If you're a young adult who's bouncing from college dorms to shared apartments, or maybe you're a new family, you're settling into your first home, chances are your parents are acting as your long-term storage unit, willingly or not. And for aging parents, those items can become more than just reminders. Sometimes they're anchors, just way to hold on to those moments. And I know it's complicated. You feel happy, you feel annoyed, and chances are your parents feel both affection and reluctance to let things go. It is really hard. And we're seeing a rise in minimalist culture, especially among millennials and Gen Z, and that tension grows. One study found that nearly 60% of millennials prefer owning fewer things, and they're more likely to rent or rotate their belongings than accumulate them. And that creates a generational disconnect. What we view as clutter, our parents view as legacy. So in today's show, Kathy Lipp, author of The Clutter-Free Home, Making Room for Your Life. She hosts a podcast. She has a Facebook group. She has, if you really want to dive in, a paid subscription group. But I know there are people out there listening who are struggling with this. I know because you write in when we have these shows and say thank you. And so we say thank you to Kathy. And we'll talk about how do we navigate these tricky conversations. So before the break, Kathy, you were talking about navigating this with your mom. And her asking you, do you know why these things are important to me? So take it from there.
Yeah. So a couple of thoughts on why are these things important to me. My parents came from a generation that if they wanted a bed set, it was probably coming from somebody in their family. You know, they were not going out and buying new. And so that's why people took such good care of their things, is because those were going to be handed down to different generations. And now you couldn't pay my kids to take their grandparents, you know, bed set because it's, it's large. It's, my kids want IKEA furniture that can be taken apart or put back together, or if it doesn't fit for the next apartment, that they can put that on Facebook Marketplace and they can get something that's actually going to work. You know, it's much more transitional. But to also not shame our parents for having the thinking that they do, I think is really important. So when my mom asked, like, do you know why this is important? I'll say no, and I say, tell me the story. Or one thing that my mom did was she put some post-it notes under some things with the story of why it was important. So my mom collects milk glass. Now, that's not something that I've ever really been interested in. I do think it's beautiful, but her big worry was that we were going to throw that into a dumpster. And I'm like, Mom, I promise you that's never going to happen. And just to get a little bit of a different feel, my brother's only a year and a half younger than me. But at one point he told my mom, you know, well, when you die, I'm just going to, you know, back a dumpster up and throw everything in. And my mom says, well, that's why you don't have a key to my house. Both my brother and my mom are pretty spicy. And so I have told my mom, you tell me what's important and I'll make sure that it's handled with honor. But that doesn't mean that it's coming into my house necessarily. There are a lot of things in my house already. And it's my job to curate the best of what my mom had to offer with what actually works with my life. And then I'm going to find places for other things that are important. But let's be honest, most of the things in our lives are not that important. So those could be, I mean, I would be grateful if something happened to me that most of my furniture could be donated to somebody else. Most of the things I love after my husband and my kids come through and take what would be important to them could be donated. And I want that to be my legacy. So reframing it and like, how do we want to live a legacy of honor? Yes, but also generosity. And so to think through it in that way is, what do you want to have happen to this item when you're gone? Or tell me the story behind this. And to really remember to honor the memory, not the item. You know, record the stories about why that picture was so important or why that framed art is so important. Gather those. You may not be able to keep that picture. Things can happen. Things can break when you're in transit, but you can always maintain the memory.
Well, that's really good advice on approaching that conversation with empathy and respect. And like you said, lest anyone think that we are being derogatory towards older generations, you know, I think that we're not at all, because I think that I talk about this in a lot of different contexts, that there each generation has a different perspective that can be helpful to the others. There's value in both, because I said I was going to answer the question, are younger generations wasteful? And you know, Kathy, I'm going to go out on a limb and, you know, we might as well just be equal opportunity offenders here. I think, yes, younger generations are really wasteful, because we see things like fast fashion. You know, that's another thing. They don't value clothes as much. So I can just order as much as I want off Amazon and send it back, or, you know, just get rid of it or throw it away. And we think about disposable tech where they're replacing gadgets, or you talked about like IKEA furniture. You know, I was thinking, I can hear my grandfather in my ear, you know, talking down to me from heaven. Okay, that's not theologically correct, but I can hear him in my soul saying, they don't make them like they used to, Jessica. They don't make stuff like they used to. And that is very true. And we have a less emphasis on repair in younger generations, where older generations, if something broke, they fixed it. If a sock had a hole, they darned it. You know, I mean, they have so many skills that are actually younger generations could really learn from, because young kids just throw stuff out and they just think, I'll replace that. I think about how much waste comes from disposable food containers, because we've got DoorDash and Uber Eats and all of those kinds of things. So how do you have any more tips for navigating that conversation and, you know, in the sandwich gap? How do we like say, okay, let's learn from everybody here?
Yeah. So let me tell you the best story that I didn't even think of until you just mentioned that. We bought this house with the skin of our teeth. And, I mean, we were like, we're not going to even be able to, you know, furnish it. And then the owners of the house, because this was a second house for them, left most of the furniture. And I was
so thrilled. Oh, praise the Lord.
Right? Miracles abound. But the one thing that they didn't leave was the IKEA kitchen table. And I thought, what an odd thing to leave behind, right? And I said, I would love to know the story about why that's the thing you're taking. And the owner said, well, Kathy, that table is deceiving because it's from the 1940s. I'm like, what? Oh. That's an IKEA table. It was an IKEA table brought over from Europe. And who knew that there were IKEA antiques, but there are. And she goes, what I love about this table is it was built well then and it's built well now. A lot of it is the mindset. Oh, and by the way, we bought the same IKEA table to replace it with.
Oh, that's cool.
We wanted to honor them and this legacy that they had. But also, we knew that it was well built. And I'm going to go out on a limb here, too. A lot of the IKEA stuff that I have bought has lasted a lot longer than some of the other things I've purchased. The good news is there is a resurgence of people who are finding those places to repair that vacuum. Let me tell you this. I have a Shark, you know, cordless vacuum is one of my prized possessions, but it wasn't vacuuming anymore. And it was heartbreaking. And in my brain, we're like, we're going to have to replace it. But I went onto their website and they have a whole guide on how to troubleshoot your Shark vacuum. And can I tell you that thing I probably spent 15 minutes on it. It is working better than ever.
Wow.
So this is my, isn't that great?
That is awesome.
This is my advice. Instead of assuming that things are replaceable, go back to the manufacturer with printers, with vacuums, with your washing machine. A lot of them are investing in instructions to keep your mechanism working longer than they used to. Because if your Shark vacuum dies after 2 years, guess what? You're not going to buy again. And so I think companies are really starting to understand that. And I see in millennials and Gen Z this real resurgence of thrifting.
Mm-hmm.
Buy It for Life is one of my favorite Reddit threads, where you go on there and people are talking about the items that they've had for 5, 10, 20, 50 years. And so looking for items that when you want to buy it, you're buying it for life, longevity. You're going to save time. You're going to save money. You're going to save energy. And those are my big, big ideas on that.
Well, and what happens is if the Shark breaks or the appliance breaks, what happens to me, Kathy, is I think, okay, I might get a new one, but I should probably keep the old one because maybe I could fix it and maybe somebody would use it. And so then you still have more clutter. But I do want to affirm and applaud. You're absolutely right, because just as in younger generations can be wasteful, I'll include myself in that. I do see that resurgence to minimalism and decluttering. We see influences like the Marie Kondo method, or sustainability is really important. We see more people, like I know my kids in college, they think it's appalling that we used Ziploc bags for sandwiches. They're like, why would you use that? You can use a glass container and keep it until, you know, you accidentally break it or what happens. We see reuse and resale, things like people reselling even designer things. And we see this interest in thrifting from, oh, this hurts, Kathy. Vintage things from, like, you know, the 80s. Oh, gosh, that just hurts.
Vintage from the 80s. You're killing me.
I know. Killing me. Yes, you know, I see them also being more eco-conscious and digital living. A lot of what they use, we have physical media, we have books, we have records, we have tapes, we have paper, and they just hardly use that. So I think there's a beautiful opportunity in both generations to see, to learn from each other and to learn. And then now I'm seeing the resurgence of what is it called? Grandma couture is what I'm seeing. Like, people want to decorate like their grandma's house. So this, maybe the young people could go to the grandparents' house and they could have a little shopping thing. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think that that is really important. And it has to lead with the grandparents to say, hey, if there's anything here that is important to you, either I would love for you to take it now, or I'd love to put your name under it for when I no longer can use the item. And you can't do that as the grandchild to say, well, my brother did, of course, but, you know, he's, like I said, spicy. And to say, if there is something that is important to you, please let me know. And I think that that is a beautiful way of saying, you don't have to take everything, but I would love for you to take something because you're important to me and some of these things are important to me, and I'd love to find out where that intersection is. And I think grandma chic is, even though I'm old enough to be a grandmother, I don't feel like it, and I'm not a grandmother, but I am down for grandmother chic.
I am too. I've always been an old soul. I crocheted in study hall in high school, Kathy. Like, I feel like I was born for that. And when we come back, we're already at our second break, Kathy. I really want to dive into setting some boundaries with your adult children's belongings. We all know nobody wants to pay for storage, right? We're all like, oh, great. No, mom and dad's garage. We can just use that. And so we will talk about that when we come back, and really thinking about that perspective shift, looking at older generations as hoarding and younger generations as wasteful, and just thinking it's just different. Younger generations have grown up with abundance and excess, while older generations lived through lack and want. And so I think, again, how can we bridge those generations to understand each other's values around stuff and sustainability and stewardship? This is a conversation worth having, and we're going to have more when we talk about, just maybe this is not the end of the conversation we're going to have. It's just the beginning of a new journey, maybe, for you and your family. And so we'll continue to talk about how to not be overwhelmed, giving you some practical strategies, and really talking about, what do you do with your adult kids' stuff if you just don't want to have it anymore? How do you navigate that? We'll talk more with Kathy Lipp, author of The Clutter-Free Home, Making Room for Your Life, and creator of the Clutter-Free Academy. Find her on Facebook. Tell her that we sent you. Tell her the Dr. Nurse Mama Show sent you. And we'd love to get you connected. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this break. In many ways, abortion was on the ballot this past election, and there's reason for concern. There are many counties, cities, and states who have radicalized abortion, and thousands of tiny babies will continue to lose their lives every day. which is why the Ministry of Preborn is on the front lines for at-risk babies and mothers with unplanned pregnancies. Preborn sponsors clinics positioned in the highest abortion areas in the country by providing them with the resources they need to rescue babies. Preborn continues to expand their life-affirming care. Their end-of-year goal is to equip 10 more clinics with ultrasound machines. These life-saving machines cost $15,000, more than most clinics can afford. When a woman meets her baby on ultrasound, she is twice as likely to choose life. And when she comes to a Preborn Network clinic, she will also be embraced with God's love. $28 sponsors one ultrasound. How many babies can you save? Please donate. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible.
Grant me serenity, Lord, and patience, for things will take time. Grant me freedom to walk a new path, and let me feel your love. In my weakness you can shine, in your strength I can fly. And you make everything, everything beautiful. You make everything, everything now. You make everything, everything beautiful. In its time, in your time, it's beautiful. Lifting open hands to you, my Savior, beautify my soul.
Welcome back, friends. That is You Make Everything Beautiful by Rebecca St. James. And you may be looking around your house and thinking, there is no amount of miracle that can make this stacks of clutter, the clutter everywhere, beautiful. But God can do impossible things. And we are on a journey this year. We are having right in the middle of the Declutter Diaries. This is a series we're doing with clutter expert Kathy Lipp. She's the author of The Clutter-Free Home, Making Room for Your Life, and creator of the Clutter-Free Academy. If you've missed our first three episodes, go back and take a listen. We have talked about 100 spaces to declutter, dealing with all of your little kids' stuff, all of the baby stuff. We've talked about dealing with stuff that's sentimental, that's special, that's hard to get rid of because people who are close to you have passed away. And today we're talking about sandwich clutter. Now, what is that? This is a brilliant concept that Kathy has coined to talk about the generations that are dealing with the clutter of aging parents and the clutter of transitional kids who are moving in and out of college or new homes or just starting adult life, and all their stuff is stacked up in our garage. I'm right there too. And we've all seen TV shows where experts come into cluttered homes and they wave a wand and they transform the space in a day. But when it comes to dealing with our sandwich clutter, honestly, it's rarely that magical. And there's a lot of emotions and it can be difficult. And we know, statistically speaking, there are over 10,000 baby boomers turn 65 each day, and many are starting to downsize, or they're looking at the emotional weight of their stuff and thinking, what are they going to do? And remaining in their homes, it's so, so, so hard. So we'll talk about that. We're going to continue to talk about that. How do we navigate those conversations with empathy and respect? And let me tell you, it's okay to feel overwhelmed. It is okay to laugh 1 minute and cry the next. These decisions aren't about things. They're about our memories, about our stories, about our lives. You are not alone. There are millions of families who are navigating this. So Kathy, before our time is over, I really want to talk about this concept of managing our adult, or what I call quasi-adults, like they're technically over 18, yet somehow we're still paying for their life. So what kind of say do I have? I need you to be I have a mortgage and a 401k kind of adult. You know, I don't know what it is that makes them adult. Well, what do you see when you're helping people with this kind of clutter?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting because these kids are adults, but they're in, like you said, it's a quasi state. And so, we had a lot of our kids who were in their early 20s to mid 20s who all still had a lot of stuff at our home, even though they weren't living with us anymore. So we had a three-part conversation, and I don't know if you should do this with all your kids at the same time, or if you say, we're going to do this at their 25th birthday, or what that is, but there's a three-part conversation I would encourage you to have. So there's, first of all, the invitation. Hey, we have loved and been happy to store your stuff, but we're thinking about making some changes in our house. So because in your kid's mind, that house is always going to be their childhood home if you're not moving away from it. But you've moved on. You know, you want to travel. You want to have your art room or your study or whatever that is. You don't want to keep up. You know, you don't want the bluey wallpaper anymore. And I do know that there are some 25-year-olds who would have bluey wallpaper. So we want to make a change. So could you go through everything by June 30th? And if for some reason they can't, or they live far away and they're coming back in August, great. Let's plan on that. But I think what some parents do is they turn every trip home into a let's go through your stuff.
And that's tough.
That's really tough. Yes. So let's set a specific time, a specific day where you don't have to figure out what to do with your stuff, especially if you live out of state or out of town, but just take what you want and then the rest of it, we will take care of for you. You can put it on Facebook Marketplace. One thing that we did when we moved from the city to the mountains is we had like a free sale where people came through our house and grabbed stuff. We just left everything out that we didn't want. We just let them take it. And then if your kids keep dragging their feet on this, just say, hey, if we don't hear back from you by August 25th, we're just going to assume it's okay to donate. Now, here's the hard part, especially for many of the moms I know. Wait, you don't want blue blankie? You love blue blankie. Okay, well, I'll keep blue blankie. No, Mom, you can take a picture of blue blankie and donate it, but that doesn't mean that Justin has to take it. Can you tell I'm talking from personal experience here?
No, not at all.
Not at all. I can take a picture of blue blankie because that was really important to you. Or better yet, I have pictures of you when you were three with blue blankie. And that's enough for me. The actual item doesn't matter. But also, I don't want to pitch stuff that's important to my kids. But if it's not important enough for them to go through, it's probably not important enough for them to take home.
Mm. That's really good. So, okay, so what's the three-step? Tell me the three-step conversation. I got step one was the invitation. What's the three-part conversation?
The invitation. Mm-hmm. Hey, we've been happy to store your stuff, but we're going to make some changes.
Okay.
The deadline. So the can deadline. You go through it by this date? And be willing to negotiate the date if you need to. And then the decision. If we don't hear back from you by blank, we'll assume it's okay to donate. And I want to give you a sentence that could be really, really helpful.
Okay. All right. I'm ready.
We'll take it away. Okay. We want our home to reflect who we are now, not just who we used to be. And I think every kid who is healthy and loves their parents can understand that transition. You know, I always laugh at the movies where the teenage bedroom hasn't been changed for 20 years. Jessica, we were the family that when my daughter moved to our local college on Saturday, she came home on Sunday to grab a couple of boxes, and her room was Roger's office.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, right. But, like, we had been putting off having office, and he worked from home. He had been working in our bedroom for, you know, 5 years. He needed an office. And, yeah, we did not let any grass grow under our feet. But I know some parents are way more sentimental than we are, but I want your home to reflect who you are now, not just to be a shrine to who you used to be. Parent is only one of the roles. And yes, it's an important role, but spouse, grandparent, doctor, nurse, you know, creative, author, all of these are also important roles. And as your role as a parent lessens in the day-to-dayness, that's the opportunity for you get to live bigger in other aspects of your life, and your house should be a reflection of that.
I think that's so hard, Kathy, because there's a balance there. And then, you know, you've got other who, like, you've got two extremes that you kind of just described here, but then take those out like 10 notches, you know, to the left and to the right.
Yeah.
And you've got those extremes. And I think what you're talking about, you know, that really convicted me when you said that. You don't want every time your kids to come home to be, let's go through your stuff either. And that can be two extremes too. It can either be, oh, look at this little paper, this little popsicle stick you made when you were five and you used to live here and you loved me and my life had meaning and value. You know, you have that kind of look going through your stuff. And then you have the, when are you going to get rid of this? I don't care. You know, feeling like you don't have a place in my home anymore. I think, again, we're talking so much more than about stuff here. I see a story here, Kathy, and that story that we need to tell our kids is you are always welcome here. You always have a place here. I may not have a place for all your stuff, but you have a place here. And I think our kids, you know, as I see, I'm in this stage of life, so I feel like I can speak to this. When my kids see me and my husband embracing our, you know, transition towards empty nester and doing things on our own, they see us happy together. That makes them happy. They love that because they don't want to picture us puttering around the house, like just saying, oh, where did all the good days go? It's so sad and lonely now, you know? They want to see us embracing that. They want to see their dad working out and, you know, keep staying physically healthy. They want to see those kinds of things. But what do you see as that story of telling them you have a place here, just maybe not your stuff?
Absolutely. So when we put the office in, there was a bed and a dresser still in that room for when Kimber came home.
I love that.
So, yeah, we're keeping that. Also, when you talk about it's okay to keep some of that stuff, especially when they're in their transitions, here's how you are not the bad guy and our kids have autonomy. Here are these two Gorilla racks for our four kids. Guys, you each get two shelves on this Gorilla rack. You can keep whatever you want here for as long as you want, but you need to get it down to these two Gorilla racks.
And that's fair.
Between the four of you. And that way they can say, oh, this is really important and this stuff really isn't important. And let's also think about it this way, Jessica. 90% of the memories for your child from ages 0 to 10 are mom and dad. They're not the kids.
And that's so true.
90% of the memories from age 18 and on are the kids, not the parents. So there's that gray area in between where you're probably splitting them equally. But that handprint that they made in preschool has no meaning to them. No meaning. All the meaning is yours. So you get to decide what happens to it.
That's so true. And because that's what I see. I see, especially about their little kid stuff, like you said, between the ages of 0 and 10, I am much more sentimental about those things than they are. And again, if you missed the second show, we talked a lot about that. How do you manage that and get it down to one plastic tub that they can go through and show their kids and, you know, just keep those things that are special. But Kathy, what advice do you have as we're closing our time together for those who maybe just feel guilty on both sides? They feel guilty because they feel like they're pushing their parents to get rid of stuff. I don't want to keep my kids' stuff anymore, but it is overtaking their lives. Would you speak specifically to those people who just are feeling guilty about it? Like you said, you're not the bad guy.
Yeah. Right. So co-create the conversation. And to say, to be able to say, let's have a discussion. Because when you go in there guns a-blazing, you need to get rid of this, you need to take this, you need to, no sentence should start with "you need to." Mm-hmm. But it's okay to start sentences with "I need." I need to clear up this space, or I need to know what to do when you, what you would like to have happen with this. So start all the conversations with "I need." I need. And that's going to be a much more productive conversation to have. Instead of pointing fingers, you're grasping hands and say, let's do this together.
That is really, really wise, saying I need to do this. And the other thing that mm-hmm. is really resonating with me is that invitation to conversation,
yeah.
just inviting them to talk about it and saying, this is what I need, and having those boundaries. So those three steps, invitation, making a deadline, and then having that decision, that can be really, really helpful. Well, Kathy, what do you say as you're coaching people all the time? And I don't even know how many people you coach, but I know it's a lot. How do you see their lives transforming? Because there may be somebody who feels like frozen to act. Like, yeah, that sounds good.
Right.
But how do you see them on the other side of this? How does it change their attitude and outlook?
It makes their relationship better with the person whose stuff, whether they're here or not. Because oftentimes we are living with those guilty tapes in our head, mm-hmm. and we're so unkind to ourselves and saying, what will these people think? But I think one thing that you said, Jessica, that's so important is when your kids see you living their best life, you are not over invested in your children. They're not having to constantly think, how do I have boundaries with my parents about these discussions?
Oh, I love that, Kathy. I love that. And here we are at the end already again. I just, that makes me so sad. But listen, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you. And I'll see you right back here tomorrow. I've got a special surprise for y'all. I can't wait to share it. We'll see you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.